Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast, live from the studio. It is Friday again, and time for me to post this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show. So, very quickly, this week I did a podcast where I went through the polls state by state, and really it was half of a podcast. So I decided to do brand new content for the radio show where I talk about the Electoral College, and then I talk about the individual state polls in detail. So it's new content. Some of it is, you know, covering the same territory as that podcast I did about, I think it was podcast 541 or two or something. I don't know. A couple of podcasts ago on the state by state stuff. Also, there's been new polls, so there's a few new wrinkles that I talk about in this Bob Davis Podcast radio show. So here comes segment one of this week's radio show. Here we go. Welcome to the Bob Davis Podcast radio show. To hear all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. We are approaching the fabled Labor Day mark in the presidential election cycle in 2016. Now, it's a truism that people start paying attention to the presidential race after Labor Day. What does that mean? It means people say that. They also said before the conventions that people don't pay attention to the presidential race until after the conventions. The next thing you're going to hear is that people really don't start paying attention to the presidential race until 2 weeks before the election. So while the media is focused in this presidential contest this year on the big national polls, the truth is that the United States presidential election is in fact 50 state elections. U.S. territories get a presidential vote, but they do not get electoral votes, except for one territory of the United States, and that is Washington, D.C. That's a whole podcast as to why they have three electoral votes. 50 state elections and one territory with three electoral votes, and that is where we're going to start with this special pre-Labor Day weekend Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Now, if you've been listening to the podcasts at thebobdavispodcast.com, you know that this week I focused, well, almost an entire podcast on the state-by-state polls for the presidential race. That is podcast 541, and it is called Electoral College Yoga because you have to twist yourself into pretzel shapes to really get a grasp of what the Electoral College vote is going to look like. If you want to listen to it, you can find it there at thebobdavispodcast.com. I think a lot of people in this country believe their vote for president elects the president. Many think the popular vote elects the president. Not true. In fact, the popular vote, as it is expressed nationally, is almost meaningless because when you cast your vote for president, you are voting for a slate of electors by party affiliation, according to 50 states' election laws. That is, a vote you cast results in one of the two mainline candidates winning the state vote. But what really happens is a party slate of electors who have probably already been chosen are actually empaneled then to vote for the president. Only 29 states require their electors to vote according to the state's popular vote. However, so-called faithless electors have never been prosecuted for their vote. The Electoral College meets at state capitals sometime in December after the national election and chooses the president and the vice president. You don't choose the president and the vice president. The number of electors in each state is equal to that state's congressional membership, including the Senate, so there are 538 electors, including three from Washington, D.C. The winning candidate has to have an absolute majority of electors, which is currently 270. And this is why there's so much focus on this so-called electoral map of the United States and the red states versus the blue states. Now, those states aren't all entirely red or blue. Obviously, it's a percentage of the popular vote that determines which way that particular state leans. Some states, it's 51%. Some states, it's 62%. Some states, it's 38%. Whatever. Republican and Democrats alike do not like the Electoral College. Hillary Clinton wants to do away with it and elect the president by popular popular vote. Republicans have been sponsoring something called the National Popular Vote, which, by the way, I can't stand, which would have electoral colleges slaved to the popular vote in 50 states. They've got all kinds of twisted reasons for why they want to do this. Why do we have an electoral college? The founders of this country felt that a direct democracy would not be stable enough, and factions in the form of mob rule might destabilize and destroy it. So they created something called a representative republic. Our elections are held to determine those who represent our interests rather than a direct democracy. I personally believe we should be going the other way when it comes to the Electoral College, hence my comments about the national popular vote. We ought to be pushing for states to free the electors to vote for the candidate they want rather than being controlled by the state's popular vote. Usually they follow the state's popular vote. There have been two serious cases that are essentially crises related to the Electoral College in U.S. history because electors could vote for two candidates not from their home state, the first one anyway. This was supposed to prevent the favorite son electoral voting, where if some guy ran from a key state, then the electors would feel the need to vote for that person. Back in the day, the person with the second largest vote tally became the vice president. So in 1796, Jefferson became Adams' vice president, and in 1800, which ended up in Congress, they elected Jefferson president after something like 35 ballots. This was the famous Aaron Burr situation that developed that essentially ended up in a duel between Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton later on. This problem was solved by the 12th Amendment, which recalibrated the electoral voting procedure. And you're probably wondering, well, how come you didn't mention 2000? Because people often recall the election of 2000 as a crisis of the Electoral College. In fact, a close election in Florida resulted in litigation regarding how votes were counted in individual counties in Florida. That litigation ended up first at the Florida Supreme Court, then at the U.S. Supreme Court, which decided the issue in favor of George W. Bush. It never went to Congress. It was never an electoral question. It was really a Florida county vote counting question. So when you vote, you're voting for, well, I should say one more thing about Florida. The reason it was super important was Florida's 29 electoral votes. So if Bush had not won Florida, he probably would not, well, I know he wouldn't have won the election. So that was the electoral votes that would have decided the election of 2000 and did. So it never reached an electoral vote issue. It never went to Congress. It was never an electoral voting question because the electors hadn't voted yet. So when you vote, you are voting for a specific slate of electors who will, in fact, elect the president. And in order to win, barring a revolt by electors, your candidate has to win an absolute majority of the Electoral College slates, which is 270. This is why polls done to assess the national popular vote are not indicative of what might happen at the state level. Because there are 50 state elections, predicting the outcome is problematic. Aside from the obvious absurdity of some talking heads telling people who's going to win before the vote, assembling a picture of how all 50 states will vote is almost impossible, even in elections which aren't that close. So just ahead, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk about the presidential campaigns currently underway in 50 different U.S. states. And I'm going to tell you where the candidates stand, good or bad, depending on your point of view, with no predictions about the outcome. I'm not for any of the two candidates. I'm not for any of the three or four or six candidates. I will only discuss the challenge ahead for the candidates and the political parties they represent in those states. And I think that's refreshing because so much of our journalism and so much of our media these days is based on advocacy. And most of what you see and hear on television and the radio are battling pundits going back and forth about who they think is going to win and why and arguing about these things. The fact is there's a lot of polling data. Some of it's current, some of it isn't so current, which I'll explain in the next segment. And there's enough aggregate data that we can begin to make some basic judgments about the way this race is sort of laying out so far. And so we're going to do that in this show. Coming up, the state strongholds for the mainline party presidential candidates. That's where we start next. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. For more of the Bob Davis Podcast, go to thebobdavispodcast.com. To sign up for the Bob Davis Podcast newsletter called The Bob Line, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. Just ahead of segment two for this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, live in the studio, people out there mowing their lawns and police cars and airplanes and stuff like that, got the windows open because it's beautiful right now. I mean, it's like the first day of the state fair, it's like a clock in Minnesota where the heat we've had, you get these heavy rains, which we had, and then the humidity goes out of the air and it's, you know, cool and it's beautiful and everyone's thinking about the state fair and they're not thinking about getting their heating checked. And Ryan Plumbing and Heating right now is featuring a heating check. It's probably a good idea to make sure the filters and the system is working right, because when it finally does get cold, because we are going to have climate change and that is the frozen hell that we refer to as winter, is coming, and you're going to want to make sure that your heating works. And when they come out to check your heating, ask Ryan Plumbing and Heating about installing high efficiency heat, because you can save a lot of money over the next 4 or 5 years with high efficiency heating. 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go metro-wide from St. Paul. That means the suburbs too, so they can get a plumber to you wherever you are in the metro. For four generations, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business, Ryan Plumbing and Heating on University Avenue in St. Paul, just west of the state capitol. For emergency service and having your heating checked now in St. Paul, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Because when it comes to keeping all of these systems running right, especially these days at home or your business, when you have plumbing or heating problems or you need to get your heating checked, you want reliable service. That means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. One more time, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. Okay, here is segment two of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. This is the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. For more of the Bob Davis Podcast, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. Well, I wanted to get new information in this show versus the podcast, so I want to give you a little primer on polling. So to start with, you should know that national preference polls usually include only about 1,200 respondents, sometimes less. Sometimes these polls are done on the phone, live. Some are conducted online, which means people take the survey online. Some are conducted by machines. I think the online polls are most interesting because they can include higher sample sizes. People can take them whenever they want. If you can get a bunch of people, if you can get a much higher sample size with an online poll, you can overcome a lot of the standard deviation stuff and the sample size problems. A good poll in general, and a good political national poll, as well as a statewide poll, is geographically and demographically balanced. That means the sample, the people in the survey, is a miniature of the actual area that's going to be surveyed. It's a miniature of the state in terms of distribution of residents and, by their age and their sex. even if everything is done right, when you get into questions that have more than one response, scaled questions, questions where people have a choice of three or four different options, those kinds of questions can have a margin of error that starts to spread out significantly and makes the data somewhat unreliable. And this is why researchers like to look for trends, because it fills in some of those questions. With these caveats on a single poll, you can imagine the issues with the media's favorite habit of aggregating different polls to predict an outcome. And you should take into account the fact that in some of the states mentioned, the polls were taken 3 or 4 months ago. When I go through the states, I'll tell you this, if it was taken months and months ago, or they've not taken a poll and the projections are based on previous vote tallies for a party. For example, in South Dakota, it is generally considered a Republican state, and it's a small enough state in the sense that polling is difficult and expensive. If no polls have been taken in South Dakota, for example, a website posting an electoral map will paint South Dakota red based on previous votes for Congress and the president. I don't like combining polls that might be called apples and oranges, and I don't like saying a candidate has a huge lead based on a poll conducted in March, but I will do that in this show, and I'm doing it just for the purposes of the discussion, but I'm going to tell you when I'm looking at polls from way back in March or May. I'm not going to carry this to an absurd extreme by giving you a mathematic probability of the election of one or the other individuals as president, and I will not predict the winner. I will only describe the factual challenge a particular candidate may have in individual states based on what the polls say and the electoral history in that state. Remember, in November, we are going to hold 50 different state elections and an election in one territory, and those people in those territory, in that territory, Washington, D.C., and the 50 different states are going to be choosing electoral slates by party. They don't know that because they're going to be voting for an individual, but you're voting for a party slate to actually vote for the president. You're not voting for the president. Now, I should say also that state-by-state polls can be more shoddy than national polls, but sometimes statewide polls are more reliable than national polls. Determining a candidate's stronghold is easy because the margins are wide and we don't have to worry about margin of error. So when we're talking about strongholds, it's pretty easy. So here we go. For the Democrats, Hillary Clinton obviously considers California a huge stronghold. California has been voting Democrat for a long time. Clinton holds something like a 22-point average lead over Donald Trump in California. And of course, California is a prize worth 55 electoral votes. In New York, Clinton has a 17-point average lead over Trump. In New Jersey, she has a 13-point average lead over Trump. In Illinois, Clinton has a 25-point lead. But it's interesting, the polls in Illinois were taken in March and July, so I don't expect big changes there, but it's interesting that they haven't had any polls recently. In Washington State, she has a 19-point lead. Here again, the polls were taken in late June and in mid-August, so I guess they're fairly current. In Vermont, she has a 22-point lead, according to the polls taken in July. She has a 30-point lead in Maine, with polls taken way back in May, and a 34-point lead average in Maryland, based on polls taken in March. Maryland is pretty much a Democrat stronghold. There are strongholds and pivotal states led by a particular candidate, and these can change, but at the Labor Day mark, this is where they stand. 10 years ago, Colorado was considered a Republican state. Hillary Clinton leads Colorado currently by an almost 11-point average lead, which can tighten or strengthen depending on the most recent polls. For the Republicans, Donald Trump's strongholds are mostly in the Mountain West or Mid-South. In many of these states, there have been no polls conducted, or the polls are from winter or early spring in 2016. So the juxtapositioning of these states is based on previous vote histories. Trump's strongholds are Idaho, where he leads by 20 points, Wyoming, Nebraska, North and South Dakota, Oklahoma, where he leads, as I think I mentioned, by more than 20 points. Across the deep and mid-south, Arkansas, Tennessee, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Alabama. In Utah, Trump leads by an average of 15, and in Indiana, he leads by an average of 18. Remember, Vice vice presidential candidate Mike Pence is the current governor of the Hoosier State. Trump recently handed out food after floods in Louisiana. He enjoys a 16-point lead, but the last poll was taken in May, and Louisiana is notoriously unpredictable. Polls back in April have Trump with a 20-point lead in West Virginia, a 13-point lead in Tennessee back in July, an 11-point lead in Arkansas back in June, and now I think it's 24 points in Oklahoma, according to polls in the late July. So Oklahoma is a Trump stronghold. Now, there's been a lot of media coverage of an August 11th poll showing the New York developer with a 15-point lead in Mississippi. I don't really see how that's news, but there it is. So these are the strong points for the two mainline candidates. Now, of course, I should mention that there are third-party candidates, most notably the Libertarian Party. But the Libertarian Party, while they are on the ballot in 44 states and Washington, D.C., they've been working on that, and not all of these state polls have included independent candidates in their polling data. So for this analysis, the Libertarians and the Green Party are pretty much excluded, mainly because even though they may be on the ballot, the polls do not include them. I'm also not speaking for the reliability of these polls or speaking for one of the candidates. I'm going to give you my final analysis of the race as it currently stands based on these state-by-state polls in the final segment of this show. If you've already listened to my electoral yoga podcast, some of the poll results have changed since I did that podcast, so some of it is new info. So now you know the strongholds for the Republican and Democrat candidates. Where do they stand in so-called battleground states and must-win states for electoral victory? Next. For more of the Bob Davis podcasts, visit the BobDavisPodcasts.com. And to sign up for the Bob Davis podcast newsletter, The Bob Line, visit the BobDavisPodcasts.com. For more of this show, visit GCNLive.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Welcome back to the studio. Just ahead of a third segment of this week's Bob Davis podcast radio show. It's still summer a little bit. We may yet get some storms, but we're coming to the end of the season that you can get repairs and fixes and improvements to the exterior of your home. Somebody was building a fence recently. They said, "We got to put a fence in the backyard. Who do I call?" And I said, "Well, you call Cairo Contracting, because Cairo Contracting is a name that you can trust. They've been in business in the Twin Cities for 15 years. Ed Cairo is from St. Paul and Bloomington. So if you have storm damage you haven't addressed yet, if you have hail damage, water damage, damage to the exterior of your home, if you have projects, gutters, roofs, window installation, stuff like that that you want to get done before the winter sets in, before it gets too cold, then you call Cairo Contracting. 612-702-2357. People say, "Where's the number?" There's a banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page that has the Cairo Contracting banner. And you just click on that. Well, you don't even have to click on it because the number is right there. Cairo Contracting is a Better Business Bureau accredited business. And again, because Ed Cairo is a local guy, you know he's not going anywhere. Residential and commercial roofing, siding, gutters, and window repair and installation. They are storm damage specialists. And I've talked about hail damage. You know, if you have roof damage, things like gutters that need to be addressed before we get the ice and snow. Remember, for 15 years, Cairo Contracting, residential and business exterior remodeling experts and storm damage specialists, the name you know when it comes to storm damage repair and exterior remodeling, like putting in fences in the back, residential and commercial, Cairo Contracting, 612-702-2357. That's 612-702-2357, Cairo Contracting. Okay, here is segment three. listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. To hear more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, remember to visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. Now, when it comes to the Electoral College, the devil's in the details. Electorally speaking, the electoral vote-rich parts of the country matter more. So this is why you see so much reporting about the Great Lakes region, Florida, and the Eastern Seaboard, or wherever there are 10 or 11 electoral votes at stake, like Wisconsin, for example, or Michigan. In electoral vote-rich states that aren't always aligned with the Republican or Democrat parties, it gets even more intense because this is where the race is won or lost, like Ohio, for example. Now, we're going to start again with the Democrat side, and we'll start with New England, the region, not the state. New Hampshire might be considered one of the few New England states potentially in the Republican column. A lot of New Hampshire Republicans. Right now, Clinton leads the polling in the Granite State by a plus 9% margin, although her numbers have been bouncing around. So that's, you know, above the margin of error in a place like New Hampshire. Elsewhere in New England, including New England, by the way, I think New England is, in fact, a stronghold, as is Massachusetts. But elsewhere in New England, the region, Clinton maintains just below 10-point average leads in Maine. I think I mentioned Maine in a previous segment as a stronghold, and Connecticut. And, of course, Vermont is a big stronghold for Hillary Clinton. Over in the Great Lakes region, we're going to start with Wisconsin, where Clinton currently enjoys a 9-point lead average. I think this is news because it can be especially disconcerting to the GOP since Speaker Ryan and the chairman of the Republican Party are from Wisconsin. And of course, the governor of Wisconsin, Scott Walker, is a former presidential candidate. The only thing that I will say about Wisconsin is we have seen Democrat majorities shown in polls not materializing in the recall vote and a couple of different elections for Walker, so we're gonna hold that out as a battleground. In Michigan, also home to a Republican governor, Mrs. Clinton enjoys an average 7.3% lead, especially important when you consider the fact that Donald Trump has been campaigning in Michigan as the guy that's going to bring back the jobs. Now, Clinton's lead has softened recently, mostly due to a Suffolk University poll that had her at a 7-point lead, or Michigan would be in the stronghold column for Clinton. Obviously, her lead in Minnesota, which is part of the Great Lakes region, is at about 13 points, so you can consider it a stronghold, except for the fact that a KSTP-TV survey about a year ago showed that Trump was up by 3. So that's what puts Minnesota in a so-called battleground position. I think the Trump poll was an outlier in Minnesota, but there it is. She also leads in Iowa by about a point and a half. Iowa can go Republican or Democrat, so I would say that is definitely a battleground state, and she's definitely within the margin of error in terms of her lead there. Now, pundits describe Ohio as a key battleground state because it has 18 electoral votes, and it is considered a must-win for the presidency. Why? Because they all say, well, no president's ever become president without winning Ohio. Someday someone will, but for the time being, okay, we'll accept that as a truism. We'll accept it. It is considered a toss-up state because it apparently can go either way, but polls in Ohio have consistently shown a lead for Clinton, despite the fact that the Republican convention was held in Cleveland. She's up by 4 or so, and that is within the margin of error. And the latest polls show preference between Trump and Clinton in Ohio tightening up a little bit. I told you in a bunch of my podcasts that I think the Great Lakes region is going to be a really key element of this election. In Pennsylvania, Clinton enjoys a plus 9% average lead, which is higher in the last few weeks than it was earlier in the year. The Keystone State is a 20 electoral vote prize for whichever party wins it. So I'd say that one is pretty – they've been voting Democrat. Let's just put it that way. A 9% is above the margin of error. Now, moving south to the Commonwealth of Virginia, the former Secretary of State holds a nearly 13-point average over Trump, which is a shocker because this is a state which used to be considered a guaranteed Republican electoral prize of 13 votes. And the only reason it is not in the Democrat stronghold column right now is because of this fact. Clinton's vice presidential candidate, Tim Kaine, is, of course, a former senator from Virginia. So Virginia is a big surprise, basically, with this kind of a margin for Clinton. In North Carolina, and by the way, when we get closer to the election, I'll talk about Virginia, because Virginia is a very complex state. It's like Ohio in that respect, because you have different kinds of populations in different regions of the state. So now let's go on down south to North Carolina. Clinton leads by one or so points on average. Here is another state which used to be considered pretty firmly Republican. It's close, but right now Clinton is in the lead in North Carolina. And I'll get to, Trump has some strengths in the South, and I'm going to get to him when I get to the Republicans. And in the West, Clinton has an 8-point lead in New Mexico, but the last poll was taken in May. She is only up by 3 in Oregon. Trump has been up there by 2. And the last poll was taken in July. In Nevada, Clinton leads by 2 with the last poll taken just last week. Here again, these are within the margin of error. So I don't think you should say, you know, somebody can take this state or not take this state, because a lot can change when you're within 1 or 2 points. No polls in Hawaii, but Hawaii is generally considered a stronghold for Democrats. I didn't mention it because, it's just one of those things that happens. When you're looking at a continental map of the United States, you don't see Hawaii until you go, oh, that's right, Hawaii's down here below Texas, except it's not. Anyway, bad news for Republicans this week in Georgia, the home of Newt Gingrich, and considered a solidly Republican state. The two candidates are essentially tied, and there have been a lot of polls taken in Georgia, and Trump's lead has been softening. That's getting a lot of coverage because it is, again, such a big surprise. Now, Georgia has had Democrat senators, and they voted Democrat, but it has always been considered a pretty strong Republican state. So to see, the two candidates essentially tied there is a big story. But again, we're within the margins of error on these ties, whether it's Trump or Clinton. So anything can happen in Georgia, apparently. Florida is a must-win state for an electoral victory with its 29 electoral votes. Here again, it is generally considered a so-called conservative state. Clinton's average lead is softening a bit due to Florida Atlantic University's poll, which showed Trump leading up by 2. So that's another one that's pretty close to the margin of error. So on the Republican side, Trump is up by 4 in South Carolina, which has been considered a Republican stronghold. 4 points all, by the way, and unfortunately is within the margin of error, by the way, depending on the size of the poll. In Missouri, Trump has led by 6, but recently polls show the Republican with a 1 or 2 point lead, so that race is tied. I'm going to tell you later why I think Missouri is really important. In Kansas, Trump has been as high as 17 points ahead, but a recent poll shows him up by only 5, which is above the margin of error, but pretty close. And I don't think that's really great news for the Republicans. Texas, of course, is a big prize with 38 electoral votes, and Trump leads in Texas by an average of 8-plus points. But his command of the race in the Lone Star State has softened a little recently. I don't think anybody expects Texas to vote Democrat, but, there it is, the lead softening slightly. Trump leads in Arizona by an average of 1.5. Again, that is within the margin of error. And as it has been improving recently, it's still within the margin of error. And then, of course, Alaska, Trump leads by 5. So the polling currently gives Clinton Kaine 272 electoral votes. That's the total of this segment and the previous segment, to Trump's 154. And that's where we stand just ahead of Labor Day 2016. Coming up, you now know the strongholds and the state-by-state advantages for Republican and Democrat candidates. What are the challenges and the takeaways? Next. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. We'll be right back. back in a studio. One of my best memories from this summer was the air show. I had such a good time at the air show, and I was there with Alpha Systems. And if you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, you've heard me talking about Alpha Systems all these months, and people say, well, what is it? Well, Alpha Systems makes something called the Angle of Attack Indicator. It's a revolutionary angle of attack indicator for general aviation, because one of the biggest problems in general aviation is pilots lose lift and crash on the final turn to the runway or when they are maneuvering. And the angle of attack indicator is simply a visual representation of the lift that the airplane has, which is the angle of attack. And their visual indicator is the best in the business. And if you have it on your plane's dashboard, you know, in the cockpit, it really is a safety feature. The bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. Don't forget, for damage to the exterior of your home because of storms this summer or jobs that you need to get done before the weather changes, Cairo Contracting. Here's the number again, because people have been asking me, what do I do about getting a fence in, or I have gutter damage, or I have some roofing damage I need to get fixed before it gets cold? 612-702-2357, Cairo Contracting, the name you can trust. They're a Better Business Bureau accredited business. They've been around. They're not going anywhere. 612-702-2357. Click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page for more info about Cairo Contracting. What else? You need to get your heating checked before it gets cold as well, and that is where Ryan Plumbing and Heating comes in. They are offering a heating check now, which means filters and things like that, and when they come out to check the heating, ask about high efficiency heating. If you can do it, it'll save you a lot of money over the next few years. Ryan Plumbing and Heating, they can get a plumber to you all over the metro. They go metro wide from St. Paul, and they've been around for four generations. 651-224-4771. That's 651-224-4771 in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They got a great website with lots of content. Check them out at ryanplumbing.com. Okay. Here is segment four, wrapping up the whole state-by-state polling stuff with some conclusions for you. So here we go. You're hearing the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Remember, for all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. For more of this show, visit gcnlive.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. Republicans won't like hearing it, but the bottom line with all the state-by-state polling data, and it is polling data, is that Democrats currently enjoy a huge electoral advantage over the Republicans. Now, the usual response to that statement is the polls lie, the polls are rigged, the polls aren't true, the polls are never right. None of those statements are true. If you understand polling, you know that the key things to think about with polls is margin of error and trends. Some of the polls are biased, yes. Sometimes the pollster ends up hitting a pocket of Democrat respondents, which have to be weighted down statistically, but they can just as easily hit pockets of Republicans that can be weighted up. And weighting can depress or magnify an advantage or disadvantage. And that's why we look for trends and why we look for leads well beyond the margin of error. And it's why we look, why political scientists look at previous votes in key states as well. In order to defeat the Democrats in 2016, here's the bottom line. Donald Trump is going to have to reverse state-by-state averages and turn currently losing averages into winning averages well beyond the margin of error. Trump has to be on track to win in Florida, Georgia, and West Virginia, North and South Carolina. He has to reverse the advantage by Mrs. Clinton and Tim Kaine in Virginia. He has to be in the lead by wider than the margin of error in Ohio and Pennsylvania, and he has to close the gap in Michigan and Wisconsin. And he has to win out west. If Clinton is going to carry the East Coast and the West Coast, Trump's going to have to win in Missouri and Kansas and Arizona and Nevada and, of course, Texas. And a win in Colorado wouldn't hurt, and a win in New Mexico would give him some breathing room here and there in case he loses Pennsylvania. Now, it goes without saying, polling indicates he is nowhere near doing this by the Labor Day mark in 2016. So the question is, can he do it? Well, in 1980, Carter was ahead in the polls until the final week or so. And of course, Kennedy's election was a surprise because Nixon was considered the successor to Dwight Eisenhower. And everyone, of course, points to the famous Harry Truman upset in the 1948 election, including the famous Dewey defeats Truman headline in the Chicago Tribune. The need for Trump to close this gap is obvious. It's the reason there has been so much recalibration to his campaign lately. He knows this is a disadvantage, and speculation about whether he can stay on message and so forth. So the idea that this is a surprise to the Trump campaign is nonsense. But politics is sport coverage, which determines what a candidate has to do and how he or she has to do it, doesn't tell you anything about the issues, and it is nothing more than rife speculation, even at its best. In fact, I think most of that analysis, up to and including the talking heads on television and the radio, is basically noise. None of those people can predict what will happen in the final weeks of the election of 2016. I am not predicting what will happen in the final weeks because I know the polls taken 3 months ago or even a week ago can change or be wrong. I plan on doing a few more of these shows to update you on what is going on with these polls because now I'm watching them every day and I'm watching state by state. I'm not paying any attention to the popular vote question because it's a moot point. It's an electoral college vote, as I've said in this show. I also know that no matter what the polling averages, there can be surprises that are not predictable. Hence, these famous come-from-behind victories, which have happened many times in our history. And of course, I don't bring up John Quincy Adams or James Polk, because in those days, nobody knew how people were going to vote. There was no media other than broadsheets, which were not objective papers of record. But wait, come to think of it, that's kind of what we have now with blogs and people screaming at each other on Fox News and CNN. Democrats now could look up in shock, and they will, and they do. They'll say, "Do you really think Donald Trump can win?" Well, to turn a phrase, why, yes, he can. The polling data at this time doesn't indicate a Trump victory, but we are a long way from the election in political terms. As you heard, in some of those key states, it is still a close race. But the Democrats could argue the popular vote polls show a Trump victory, so their candidate is the come-from-behind kid in this race. Maybe so, maybe not. The fact is that the polls show a strong victory right now for Hillary Clinton, so the idea that she is some kind of underdog is ridiculous. It trumps the underdog. Now, it is very close in Georgia, in North Carolina, in terms of margin of error. It's close in Ohio and Florida and Missouri and Iowa and Arizona and even Nevada. Now, you guys know that I travel all around the country. I've been to every region of this country except for the Northwest and New England, which I plan to rectify in the latter quarter of this year. I had to laugh recently because one commentator wrote an article saying that because there are Trump signs all over rural America, somehow that means something is going on. Now, I've been driving through rural America on back roads for more than a year, and yes, there are a lot of Trump signs out there. Does it mean something's going on? Unless those rural voters turn out in huge numbers and suburban voters turn out in huge numbers with them for Trump, and especially in states like the ones I just mentioned, driving through some part of the state or part of the country like Utah and counting signs is just about the dumbest thing that you can do. But this is the nature of our journalism. People like to write contrary articles because it gets clicks. And just because you don't know anyone who would vote for Trump doesn't mean people won't vote for him. And just because all of your friends hate Hillary Clinton doesn't mean that she won't win the Electoral College vote. Almost all of the states I mentioned include big urban centers, which usually turn out big numbers of voters for Democrat candidates election cycle after election cycle. I'm talking about Detroit and Chicago and Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. Even in Republican strongholds like Texas, there are some cities that turn out for Democrats in big numbers. This is the great challenge of the Republican Party, turning out the vote, and not just in rural strongholds or the states that are considered Republican strongholds in the Midwest and the Mid-South. Aside from Tennessee and Kentucky and Oklahoma, we're talking about states with 2 and 3 electoral votes. If you can rack them all up, great. But they're not going to decide the election. Ohio and Texas and California and Virginia and Florida at all. Will. This is why I've told Republicans again and again and again, It is all about building organizations that deliver votes and money and nominating candidates that can energize those organizers and the voters. It remains to be seen if the Republicans nominated a candidate that can do that. This contest has become almost an entirely Donald Trump contest based on his personalities and the issues he is considered to have command of. If the issues go against Trump over the next few weeks, he will have trouble closing the gap. Finally, some say that Trump's vote is not going to be picked up by the polls, since the people who vote for him won't talk to pollsters. I think that's a fair concern for Democrats and a fair plus for Republicans to tout their candidate, but how much is the Trump undervote? Nobody knows. If it's a point, 2 points, if it's within the margin of error, because given Democrat political machines in the big cities and in the battleground states, Trump's undervote has to be enormous to win the electoral vote. Now, I'm not one to say whether it is or isn't, but the challenge where we stand today is pretty big for Donald Trump. If he can get the poll averages within a point or two of Mrs. Clinton on election day, then the so-called undervote, if it materializes, can have an impact. But for now, it doesn't look good for Mr. Trump, which might mean also, by the way, a loss of the Senate for Republicans. Finally, one of the things I despise most about politics are the exhortations to vote for the endorsed candidate and that you bleed red or blue, that if the other guy wins, the nation is going to be destroyed, and so on. I would just say you should vote the way you think best. I don't think people should let people intimidate voters into voting the way they want you to vote. You should do what you think is best. So now you have most of the facts surrounding the Electoral College and the election of the president. I'm sure there are a few things I missed, but I'm pretty sure the polling data so far is about right in terms of what I've told you it says. I will do another one of these at the end of September and then just before the election at the end of October. Until then, that's going to do it for this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Again, a brand new show with brand new content. For all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. To sign up for the Bob Davis Podcast newsletter, The Bob Line, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. And by the way, if you do visit thebobdavispodcast.com on a desktop, we are featuring now streaming, so it's live streaming audio of the podcasts. If you listen on a mobile device, it's Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com, GCNLive.com. You can also initiate the streaming on your device by just hitting play when you hit the BobDavisPodcasts.com website. So, thanks for listening, and we'll check back with the state-by-state polls in about a month on the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Boop. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Well, thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, as I mentioned in the show, on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com, and on the Patriot in Minneapolis at 11 p.m. on Sunday nights, and more affiliates as I get them. Also, thanks for signing up to the Bob Davis Podcast newsletter called The Bob Line. Haven't done one yet, but I will, and I cannot send it to you if you don't sign up, and the sign-up is right below the very top line of the thebobdavispodcast.com, and I really appreciate the likes and shares and favorites and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Getting ready to head out west in September, early October. My mom says it's a long trip, but I don't care. So I appreciate the donations for diesel fuel, Komodo Dragon coffee, and beef jerky. Thanks for listening to Podcast 543, the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show for this week. Back to my coffee.